Casey Corcoran Podcast.
Hi, I just wanted to let you know that JC is out there running his mouth. Let me read you a comment that he left to someone. Hello, Beth, you Nazi cow.
Now, in a desperate attempt to fill 24 hours of programming, here's some bullshit that happened somewhere today. We've got some footage here of the bullshit, which began just after 3 o'clock this afternoon, when residents in this neighborhood were shocked to see this fairly common thing happening. An attractive witness described the event in breathless terms.
I went to my window and I was like, whoa, there's some bullshit happening.
That happened right over there. I'm an older man, so you can trust what I say.
Authorities in special uniforms rushed to the scene to stand around while our cameras filmed them. Our reporter Keith Collins joins us now live from the scene of the bullshit through the use of expensive technology. Good to be with you again, Keith. We have a colorful graphic here that shows instances of bullshit like this are on the rise. Is that right?
Yes, although why is unclear. Some say it's because of one fucking reason. Others say it's because of some other fucking reason. I talked to this random expert on the subject who told me this thing you're about to hear him say right after he points at a piece of paper.
I spent my entire life attending the nation's most prestigious schools to talk about bullshit like this. I'm really just happy to be on TV.
Now let's see if we can drag this out a little longer by showing emails written by some of our viewers. I once saw some stuff kind of like the shit you're talking about happen. I have nothing more to add. Another person says, I am angry that things like this happen. I get mad about every bullshit thing I see. So obviously a lot of opinions there to make this story seem somewhat meaningful.
Oh, absolutely, Glenn. This bullshit has some broader implications. Here's a list of tips on how to avoid bullshit happening to you.
And here's some footage of Congress.
Yes, I see that.
Well, thank you, Keith. Let us know if there are any updates on this bullshit story from there.
There's no way there will be.
Very good. We'll check back with you in an hour anyway.
I'm just some fucking guy.
When we return, we'll look at live footage of a car chase taken from a helicopter and Free Associate about what's going on.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
From Maryland Heights, Missouri, on the 6th of July, 2021. How you doing, kids? It's the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jcontheline.com. I hardly know where to begin. I have not stopped moving since the last time you and I talked last Thursday. And like everybody else, took a couple of days off and just tried to enjoy life a little bit here in St. Louis and did a lot of that. Like I said, I don't even really know where to start. I sat in the announce booth with our buddy John Hewlett the other night. I didn't get around to telling you on Thursday because that was actually last Tuesday, but I thought I'd bring it up now. It was the Arizona Diamondbacks in town, about 22,000 people in the place. But we, you know, John's in there trying to do a job, and every couple of minutes he has to announce something. He has a little foot pedal. He pushes it down, and so sometimes you don't realize that the microphone is on because you don't see him reach for anything. It's all done under the table with a little foot pedal. And so if you were at the game on Tuesday night and you thought you heard my voice coming out of the coming out of the public address system, it probably was me, because sometimes the mic was on and I didn't know. You know, and you know, you're looking at the field, you're watching the game, you're trying to anticipate what happens, but he knows his job better than I do. But we sat there and we just laughed our asses off for about 7.5 innings before I tried to beat the traffic on the way home. Friday night, the Powerplex out of the St. Louis Mills, or what's left of it, or what used to be the St. Louis Mills. Oh, this guy, Jeff Faulkner. I think he's 42 years old, local musician, plays in a couple of bands, got some duos, stuff like that. But his big pet project is Mr. Blue Sky. And I really think the 4th of July holiday hit them in terms of being able to sell tickets. That should have been a much larger crowd out there, because this tribute to ELO is so amazing. 90 minutes of just the orchestration. I think they had 5 strings on stage, 10 people just full sound. And, you know, he wears this wig that makes him look exactly like Jeff Lynne of ELO. And the people are so talented. They're just amazing. So I'm telling you right now, if you're even a passing, you don't even have to be a fan of the Electric Light Orchestra. I just think that if you like watching really, really well executed live music on stage, and then if you're an ELO fan on top of that, then it's even better. Boy, are they good. So watch for their next performance somewhere. And also I met Abby Stahlschmidt on Friday night, who is the fiddle player, the lead fiddle player. I told her, I said, Abby, we had been talking online a couple of times on Facebook and stuff like that, but this was the first time I had a chance to actually meet her. And I said, Abby, I've been covering entertainment in St. Louis for, I don't know, like 35 years. And I can't remember the last time that somebody 25 years old walked out on a stage and just took command of the entire performance. And then you get into the expert musicianship on top of it. She is just amazing, but she's a model. So when she walks out, she's got these long legs and she wears these little spandex outfits with boots. And then she starts playing on top of it. And there's just something about her stage presence that's really, really remarkable. And then in the VP Fair Parade on Saturday, she played, I think it was America the Beautiful or something like that, on fiddle, the whole thing. You may have seen that. But this is, boy, I don't even know where to start. Like I said, this kid is amazing. Abby Stahlschmidt, remember that name. Saturday morning, there's one name you'll recognize and one you won't. Let me tell you who I had breakfast with on Saturday, and I'll start with the person whose name that you probably don't recognize, and that name is Julie Lally. Now, let me tell you, all the years that I worked at Channel 4, pardon me, I worked with her dad. He was one of the guys in the technician's booth who, you know, had to do with what you see on the TV news in terms of pushing buttons and direction and, you know, cameras and all that sort of stuff. Well, Julie started out at the, I think her first gig was at the Fox Theater, working as the liaison between the press and the Fox Theater. But anyhow, she's been working in public relations. And in fact, El Monstero is one of her clients. And a lot of the shows and events that you see and a lot of people who pop up on radio stations for interviews, you know, with regard to things that are going on in St. Louis, entertainment-wise, she's sort of one of the driving forces behind all of this, and she's an absolute sweetheart. And her story is both heartbreaking and inspirational on top of it, but we'll save that for another day. So it was her and also our pal Trish Gazelle, who is the new superstar afternoon co-host on the 50,000 watt clear channel voice of Del Mar Gardens, KMOX, in addition to KAZK. That's right. She goes on the air at 10 o'clock in the morning and doesn't get off until 6 o'clock at night. And so we sat there, and you want to talk about, that was about a breakfast with those gals on Saturday morning at First Watch. God, we had a great time. Then on Saturday afternoon, it was over to Chandler Hill Winery, where our pals Kelly Wilde and Clint, and why am I I'm having a brain fart right now trying to remember Clint's last name, and all I can think of is Howard, but that's Ron Howard's brother. I know that's not him. But Kelly and Clint were just sounding great. Ran into one of those crazy Gelman guys, those real estate guys here, a couple of other friends and stuff like that. It was just a fantastic, beautiful Saturday afternoon in the far reaches of the St. Louis area. And the wine was good, too, and the food is amazing. And I don't know how I lived in the St. Louis area all these years and never made it to Chandler Hill Winery, but boy, that's a nice place out there, my God. And then we spent the evening with my pal from Spain, who was in town with her daughter. And boy, oh boy, the stories, the stories, the stories. Sunday morning in the backyard for a brunch with our old pal Lori Mack and her husband Alan. And again, just lots of laughs and loving and pictures and all sorts of stuff. Off to the Chesterfield YMCA pool in the afternoon. And then I came back home and watched The Music Man. There's three musicals I absolutely love. One is South Pacific. The other one was Bye Bye Birdie, And the third one is The Music Man. Beyond those three, I have no interest in musicals, so don't be getting any ideas. But I love The Music Man. By the way, they're going to do that on Broadway starting this fall with Hugh Jackman in the lead role, the one by Robert Preston. And just seeing Shirley Jones. Shirley Jones, I believe, was like 24 or 25 when she shot that movie. Beautiful soprano voice. And, you know, that's one of those movies like, I don't know, Ferris Bueller or something, where you could be vacuuming on a Saturday afternoon and just sort of channel surfing, and you walk past the TV, and if I see The Music Man playing, that's it. I stop everything I'm doing. I pick it up from wherever it is. I picked it up, and I watch it till the end. What a marvelous, marvelous way to spend a Sunday afternoon. We managed to hit Mission Taco twice already since we got here to town. While we're sitting here watching, you know, whether our place down in the Tampa area, where I spend some of my time, is going to get blown away. But, well, you know what? Here's the thing. The people down there are describing it as a baby storm. Even though if you watch the national media or the Weather Channel or something like that, they certainly give you the idea that this is a bigger deal than that, with maybe a 4-foot storm surge. And I have friends from St. Louis, as a matter of fact, who live in Madeira Beach, only 2 blocks off the water, and they've been sandbagging all weekend. And, you know, it's going to hit them a lot harder than our place, which is further north and about a mile and a half off the water. So the place we have down there should not be too terribly affected by this. It's a tropical storm, 60-mile-an-hour winds. It should not present too much of a problem. So at one point, it looked like I was going to hop a plane and go running back there to protect the property. But it looked more and more as we got updates on the hurricane. Well, it was a hurricane for a while now. It's back to being a tropical storm, but we just figured, no, it's probably not going to be a big enough deal to have to batten down the hatches. Oh, by the way, for those of you wondering how come I haven't posted anything on Facebook, it's because something really, really bizarre happened. Last week, I got a notification from the swell folks at Facebook that something that I had posted, now listen carefully to this, okay, that something I had posted had violated community standards, and that they were taking away my Facebook rights for an entire 30 days. What could I have said or done or posted that could have made the Facebook gods have such an excessive reaction? 30 days sitting in Facebook jail because, and again, listen carefully, I posted a picture that said, here's what happens when you wash your MAGA hats with your sheets. And it showed some Ku Klux Klan guys in pink robes. Okay? Pretty funny, I think. But they got a weird thing about the Ku Klux Klan. And did I mention, by the way, that the post I'm referring to that has put me in Facebook jail for 30 days was from 7 months ago? And somehow the Facebook gods awakened, or somebody complained or something. So I have no idea. But we're going to fix that pretty soon, because I've been threatening to do this for a very, very long time. But I think we're going to move everything over to the jceontheline.com website and quit dicking around with Facebook, who regularly have these sort of capricious hissy fits. And I'm not spending any more time talking about Facebook. Well, it turns out marijuana must make you run faster, because that's essentially what they're telling Sha'Carri Richardson, who is the fastest woman on Earth, and she has that title because Mary Phelan is no longer alive. You know, I mentioned something about that a couple of years ago, and people got really mad at me. Well, I'm sorry, the Mary you knew and the Mary I knew are two different Marys, by the way. Anyhow, they're signing petitions and everything for the Olympic Committee. I don't think it's going to change anything. It's absolutely the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And even stupider, by the way, is the athletes, and Michael Phelps did this too, became very apologetic about it and almost acting like they were guilty of some sort of great transgression, when in fact smoking a little weed. Come on. This omnipotent attitude that the Olympic Committee and the USOC, whatever they call it. Again, I'm not wasting any more breath on that either. Oh, one of the things that I've been gathering since I got to town about a week or so ago is the idea that if you like conservative if you like conservative radio, which you probably don't if you're listening to me, but if you have friends, they're going to have three new choices. That's right. Three more conservative radio stations are coming to the St. Louis area. And I'm not going to tell you where they are or anything like that, but I'm telling you, a lot of big names from conservative radio in the St. Louis area are going to be popping up on new frequencies over the course of the next couple of weeks and months. And oh, by the way, some people whose names that you would immediately recognize, and maybe I'll deal with this on an actual name-by-name basis somewhere down the line somewhere, have turned QAnon. And if I told you some of the names, I think you might be sort of surprised, but there's a lot of this QAnon stuff that's popping up. And what these people are doing is calling other broadcasters in the area and, you know, won't let them off the phone until they have them convinced that Pizzagate is real. You think I'm making this up? You think I'm kidding about this? I'm not. Some very, very recognizable names in the St. Louis broadcast community have turned QAnon. And I think at some point I probably am going to name names. I just don't feel like doing it today. I'm still sort of, you know, trying to enjoy this 4th of July. For not just the 4th of July for me, it's also my vacation. Trying to enjoy the afterglow of all of that, even though here we are all back to work here on Tuesday, the 6th of July. All right, time for our yearly 4th of July fallout. This is a collection of stories about people who did dumb things with fireworks. And they burned down their house. A bunch of fireworks went off all at once on a beach in Ocean City, Maryland, Sunday morning. Sunday morning. They were meant for a show later that night. Nobody hurt. Four people in Toledo, Ohio, injured when the whole U-Haul full of fireworks went up Sunday night. One report I saw says a teenager started a fire in the back of the U-Haul on purpose. A minor league baseball team in Iowa did a fireworks show on Sunday. Then one of the guys who ran it was driving home when leftover supplies in his car caught fire. He made it out, but his car burned up. A guy with an active warrant in Missouri got arrested after he was caught shooting fireworks at a Taco Bell. An ice cream man in Northern California caught selling fireworks out of his truck instead of ice cream. Last week, a huge stash of illegal fireworks caused a bomb squad truck to explode in L.A., Now the guy who owned all the stuff is facing federal charges. It turns out he was storing 32,000 pounds of fireworks in his backyard. Over the weekend, I found out the hard way that you can be under a tree in complete shade and still get a pretty good sunburn. I still don't know what happened or how this happened. I was at that Chesterfield Y pool. And I found a tree. I was sitting in the grass. I found a chair, and I just sort of spaced out there where my daughter and her friend were in the pool for a couple of hours. And I get home, and I look like a lobster. I'm like, wait a minute. I wasn't even in the sun. I was in the shade. So I guess the reflective qualities of the sun, maybe off the pool. I don't know. Last month, Google Trends put out a list of the top five questions people had about sunburn cures. They did the same thing for sunblock, and here are the top five questions that we apparently have been Googling about sunscreen so far this summer. Number one, how long does it last? If you're talking shelf life, 3 years. Or if you mean how often to reply, it's every 2 hours, especially if you're swimming. How does sunscreen work? Well, some of the chemicals in it reflect UV rays, so they don't hit your skin. Other chemicals absorb them, so your skin doesn't. Is sunscreen bad for you? Well, there's been talk that a chemical called oxybenzone might cause cancer, but there's not a lot of solid proof yet. Harvard recently did a blog post that said stats linking it to cancer could be skewed. They say people who wear a lot of sunblock might have a higher risk of skin cancer because they just spend more time in the sun, not because sunscreen is causing it. When was sunscreen invented? Because I'm not really sure we had it when I was a kid. Chemists have been working on it since the 1930s. A guy in Austria came up with one in 1938 that had an SPF of 2. Then we had SPF 15 by the 70s, and the first waterproof sunblock hit stores in 1977. Well, see, you know, I was a kid in the 60s. What is the best sunscreen? According to Consumer Reports, they do an annual ranking. This year's list includes the Walmart brand called Equate Sports Lotion. It has an SPF of 50. By the way, if you go over 50, it's just yang, yang, yang. There's no real reason to have SPF 51 or 60 or 70. They're just jerking you around by putting a higher number in. 50 is, from everything I've read, that's pretty much the best you can do. Although there's some baby stuff that I had when all my girls were little kids, and you rub that on there, it's like made out of corduroy. It's like, why bother even taking them outside at that point? Consumer Reports says that Hawaiian Tropics Sport Spray is good too. SPF 50. It is the 6th of July, and we're still playing hockey. About that, Pat Maroon last night. Man, does this guy have a flair for the dramatic? Oakville's very own Pat Maroon with the game-tying goal for the Tampa Bay Lightning last night against Montreal, but Montreal scored in overtime, and that was the end of that. So they go to a game 5. That is supposed to be tomorrow night in Tampa. I guess it remains to be seen whether or not they can even open the Amalie Arena on Wednesday night in the middle of the tropical storm, because it's still, I mean, the thing will probably still be hitting the Tampa Bay area. It's not so much, I'm sure the teams can get in, but it might not be convenient for the fans and also the stadium workers. That's what everybody always forgets, is the stadium workers. I mean, there's a lot of people who come from a lot of distance away from places like the Scott Trade Center or whatever, who work, you know, selling you hot dogs and beers and stuff like that, and they got to be able to get there too. So if they can't open that place tomorrow night, they're going to probably have to delay that game, you know, postpone it by a day or two. But anyhow, it will be one way or the other game 5 sometime down in Tampa this week. And I was thinking about this last night. You know, I sort of specialize in a couple of things, and one of them is figuring out a particular song to play for a certain interview or a certain event or something like that. And it dawned on me, I don't remember a lot of songs that even, not even are about hockey, but even reference the game of hockey. I mean, think about it right now. Can you ever remember any song that talks about hockey? I mean, there's lots of songs that either directly reference baseball and football. I mean, Billy Joel has that song Zanzibar, John Fogerty with Center Field, and I could probably come up with another, you know, dozen songs that in some way reference baseball or use baseball as a metaphor. I don't know that off the top of my head I can think of a lot of pop or rock songs that mention football or golf or something like that. There's a Joni Mitchell song from back in the 1970s called Raised on Robbery. Look at those jokers who do that damn hockey game. And then, if you can still get your hands on this Steve Miller Anthology CD that was put out about, oh, maybe 20, 25 years ago, there's an alternate take of Rockin' Me. And it didn't sound a lot like the one that they eventually chose to put on the album, but it's still interesting to listen to why Steve Miller, who I believe spent most of his time in San Francisco, would bring this up. I don't know.
Bring in the tanks. The FBI, the CIA, the Oakland Police Department, everybody. The Buffalo Sabres.
Make you this promise. We almost did it, I think it was about 2.5, maybe 3 years ago, when Steve Miller was playing somewhere south of St. Louis, and we almost had him on the air. He's somebody I've wanted to interview for a long time. We're going to get him someday. We're going to get him someday, and when we get him, I'm not only going to ask him about that alternate take of Rockin' Me, but also why he would mention the Buffalo Sabres. He's 3,000 miles away from Buffalo. But this is the kind of stuff I specialize in, making you lay awake at night, planning things in your head, keeping you up at night too, just like me, thinking about all this stuff. Oh, by the way, one more mention about hockey, which, did I mention we're still playing on July 6th? Think about this for a minute, these two things. Let's just say tomorrow night, the Tampa Bay Lightning wraps up the season. They beat Montreal. They take the series 4-1 and the hockey season ends on July 7th. Those players on Tampa and Montreal will have approximately 8 weeks before they have to return to the ice for practices and then exhibition games leading into the 2021-2022 season. 8 weeks! Oh, I can drink a lot of Molsons in that time, eh? And then the second thing is, I went around Busch Stadium and a couple of sports venues a couple of years ago because I had this idea of doing a little piece on what's the most difficult thing to do in sports. For years, people always just said the automatic answer was the most difficult thing to do in sport is hit a curveball. Well, I got news for you. If you have any athletic ability at all, I could probably put you out on a baseball field and throw you about 30 curveballs and then say, okay, you've watched them all. Now, here comes another one. See if you can hit it. And I'll bet you that between pitches 31 and 40, you'd hit one. Now, hitting a curveball in a major league environment where a guy goes from 100 miles an hour and then throws a curveball at you at 87, yeah, that's a very, very difficult thing to do under those circumstances. But if you know a curveball is coming, there's ways to hit it. A fastball, that would be a completely different story. You could be out there all day trying to hit fastballs that are coming at you 100 miles an hour. You'd never even foul one off. But back to the idea of what's the most difficult thing to do in sports. I remember Rick Horton's answer was a little surprising. He said anything on skates. Now, that's obviously spoken by somebody who can't skate, you know, but it's maybe not the answer that falls under the same set of criteria, because I'm not talking about the athletics here, obviously, because I think the most difficult thing to do in sports is to repeat a championship in any sport. I'm talking hockey, football, baseball, whatever, because so many things have to happen to your favor during a championship winning season. The ball just has to bounce your way a couple of times more than the people who are chasing you down for first place. There's so many intangibles, team chemistry and momentum and all this sort of stuff that can change and that does change on an ongoing basis. Things just don't stay the same. How many times does some team win a championship and then a bunch of guys leave the team because their contracts are up, or, you know, free agency and all that sort of stuff? And so now it's even more difficult because you upset the chemistry of that team. It's not the same players. It's not the same team chemistry. And also now, you know, teams are, you just won the World Series, for example. Every other team in the league is up now when they play you. They're trying to knock off the championship team in the upcomings in the following season. So they play a little bit harder, and I think they're a little more intense out on the field or the ice, the playing surface, whatever it is. And they're really coming after you. So I've often said that I think the most difficult thing to do in sports is to repeat a championship, and I'm sticking with that story. Okay, a couple of more loose ends before we wrap it up here for today. Birthdays today, Eva Green, who likes to take her shirt off, and God bless her. She's 41 today. Kevin Hart, 42. 50 Cent is 46. Jeffrey Rush, Oscar winner for The King's Speech, Pirates of the Caribbean. He was in that too. 70 years old today. Shelley Hack, the forgotten angel on Charlie's Angels, 74, and was fantastic in a Martin Scorsese movie called The King of Comedy. Oh, man. 74 today. Sylvester Stallone, 75. George W. Bush, 75. Burt Ward, the boy wonder, 76. The Dalai Lama is 86 today. 136 years ago today, 1885, Dr. Louis Pasteur successfully tested an anti-rabies vaccine. How about that? You get a shot and then you don't get rabies. The vaccine worked. What were the chances of that? 27 years ago to 1994, Forrest Gump with Tom Hanks was released. And it was a year ago, 2020, you just leave this long-haired country boy alone. Charlie Daniels died of a stroke. He was 83. I love this story as we're less than 6 months away from Christmas now. A doctor diagnosed the injuries that the two wet bandits suffer during Home Alone. You know, everything from getting severe burns to having that paint can hit Daniel Stern directly directly in the head. You got the possibility of infections and everything from walking on broken glass. The doctor said 23 of the injuries the wet bandits suffer from in Home Alone would have killed them. 23. Here's one I did not know, and I've just been staring at this story all morning because I still can't believe it. If you don't include Super Bowls, the biggest delivery day in the history of Domino's Pizza was what? The day O.J. Simpson had the Bronco chase in June of 1994. Think about that. If you're stressed out about the world population because you've just decided you're going to worry about stuff like that, approximately 6,420 people worldwide die every hour, while 16,720 people are born. So with those numbers, the world population grows by more than 10,000 every single hour. And now you know. And that's it. The J.C. Corcoran Podcast from Maryland Heights, Missouri. This morning on the 6th of July, 2021 is in the can. Do your best to spread the word and let everybody know that we're here every weekday morning at jcontheline.com at 7 Central. You enjoy your day. Back in the morning. In the meantime, we beat this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.